Okay, my friends, we're here to learn the Sefer Chovos HaTalmidim together. There are copies of the Sefer around the basement. Just some people have their own. If a person wants one, we might have different copies. You could have one, you could write if you want into it. Also, I strongly suggest that you have one that you could look into and see the words inside yourselves. I think it's very, very helpful. It's a very, very special Sefer that we've learned. I've been learning this Sefer for around 15 years. I learn it every single week. I've finished the Sefer many, many times. I finish it basically twice a year. Basically every other year. So I've been doing the Sefer in Mamish. Every time I learn it, it still manages to somehow touch my heart. It's a very special Sefer that got a tremendous amount of publicity. Back in the day, it had tremendous publicity even today. Some of the people that know about the Sefer, and in the Chassidish, by the way, in the Chassidish circles, the Sefer is like considered to be like textbook. This is one of the things that everyone learns. This is a staple to learn Chovos Talmidim, the Pius Etzner Rebbe, Reb Kolonimus Kalman Shapira. That's what his name is. And even not in the Hasidic world, in the world of psychology, the book also has a tremendous amount of got a tremendous amount of attention. As I mentioned, whether it was from the famous Dr. Rabbi Tursky, or if it's from Dr. Pelkowitz, David Pelkowitz, all these are famous big psychologists that spoke about how anything a person can want from modern psychology is here in this teeny little book right here. And that all the big ideas and the brilliance of the Pius Etzner Rebbe. I'm going to speak a little bit about who the Rebbe was before, just so you get a little bit, because we're jumping in, those of you that are new here, jumping in a little in the middle. We're on page, I got the new printing in front of me. We're on page Ayin Vav. Page Ayin Vav. I got the new printing in front of me, so there might be an old printing. It's somewhere near that area. The Pius Etzner Rebbe, he passed away around 65 years ago. I'm going to say something around there, something in that vicinity. No, a little bit more than that. But he passed away, he didn't pass away, he was killed. He was killed in the war, in the Holocaust. He was in a gas chamber. And he doesn't have a kever because he was killed in Treblinka. Treblinka is an extermination camp. There are concentration camps and extermination camps. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure he was killed in Treblinka. I'm almost positive. And in Treblinka, there was no barracks. Got you there by train, and they just gassed you. So you were in Treblinka for all of maximum 2 hours. I think it was less even. That's it. You're in. You're dead. He lived through the war, and aside for the fact that he was killed in the war, before that happened, he was known as the Rav of the Warsaw Ghetto. He went through a tremendous amount of difficulty, tremendous amount, from losing his father at the young age of 2 years old. He was an orphan, to losing his son, losing his wife, losing his siblings. People were dying around him, and he was still Rebbe, and he was trying to give encouragement and chizik to the people that were there in the Warsaw Ghetto, and he still held court, and he still sang and davened and Yom HaNaroyim, and there's a lot of descriptions about how the Rebbe was holding firm through all of these, the challenges that he went through. He was the grandson of the most famous Noam Elimelech or Elimelech Milizhensk. His father's name was Elimelech. He was a great grandson. His father was a grandson of Rabbi Elimelech Milizhensk. He was a great grandson of Rabbi Elimelech Milizhensk. And his father was a Rebbe. That was the way, you know, the Rebbe's sons became Rebbe. And he was a Rebbe. And when he was born, his father right away sensed that this was a special neshama, and he had someone who was in charge of making sure that his son would never be without a yarmulke. A yarmulke is a very important thing, and the Gemara speaks about the person that the yarmulke can have a very big impact on a person's yiras shamayim. So the Rebbe put a chassid in charge of standing over the Pius Etzner's bed, Kolonimus Kalman's bed, and if the yarmulke would ever fall off while he's sleeping, a little baby in the crib, the chassid would put the yarmulke back on his head. That was his job, to make sure that the Rebbe always had a yarmulke on his head at all times. And when he was 2 years old, I'm sorry, the father died when he was three. When he was 2 years old, He got sick. The Piyusetzna got sick. He was a two-year-old baby, and his father was very disturbed. And his father took off his shtreimel and said, if he's sick, I'm not Rebbe. I'm not fearing Tish. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing Kabbalah's Kohel, nothing. Until this boy is better, I'm not Rebbe. And everyone was davening, and the father took, interesting, he took pieces of his lulav. He took off branches of the lulav and tied it around his son's fingers, some sort of skula, and the son got better. And the Rebbe got better, the Rebbe. And he lived. And he grew up to be the Rebbe. His father passed away when he was three. He was brought up by the Kuznetzer Maggid. Kuznetzer Rebbe brought him up. And at 13 years old, aside for having his bar mitzvah, he also had his erusin, which means that he got engaged at 13, got married at 16, became Rebbe at 20. When his father died, he's only 2 years old, so there's no Rebbe. So all the Hasidim went to the Ostrov Tzergoyin. Some of us were talking about the Ostrov Tzergoyin a little bit. Ostrov Tzergoyin was this major, major Rebbe in Poland. That's not far. It's not far at all from Warsaw. They all went, because there's no Rebbe anymore in Piasetsna, or it wasn't Piasetsna, it was Gradzinsk, whatever that is. Whatever. Kitzer, there's no Rebbe anymore. They all went to Ostrovtsa. When the Piasetsna turned 20, so he sent everyone home. He says, go back. Now you have Rebbe, it's time to go back. Right? Don't stay with me. Go there. And they all went back, and Piasetsna became a very, very popular Hasidus. Now, the Rebbe, you know, was world famous because of the Sefer, this Sefer that we're talking about, Sefer Chovetz Talmidim, is world famous. The Sefer made it even to Morocco. The Sefer was in Morocco. Someone from Morocco was taken by the Sefer and wrote a kvittel to the Rebbe in Poland. That's pretty far. And had a big yeshua. The Rebbe, you know, he said there was someone that was sick in his family. So then all of the people in Morocco, they wrote a huge list of everyone needed yeshuas, and they sent it to Piasetsna that the Rebbe should daven for them. So he was like, everywhere people were all very taken by the Piasetsna Rebbe. The Rebbe was very mekusher to Eretz Yisrael. He loved Eretz Yisrael. He wanted very much to come to Eretz Yisrael. He had a brother that moved to Eretz Yisrael. He very much wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael. As a matter of fact, he one time sold everything he had. He sold his house and sold everything because he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. He never made it. But his heart was always in Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbe also was a person who was very strong on having emunah. And especially when it came to situations when people were in difficult medical situations. There were times when doctors didn't know whether or not they wanted to do surgery. And the Rebbe would take on himself, Achrayis, I'm telling you to do the surgery. The Rebbe would get involved in different type of medical situations. And he would say, he said that it's not medication that heals. It's the Yeshua doesn't come from doctors, it comes from the emuna chazaka that the choyle is b'teach b'Hashem. The Yeshua comes from our emuna. And there's no better refuah than emuna and bitachon. And this was what the Rebbe was mechazik. Now, he had a rough life. He had a rough life. Emuna does not mean that things are going to always just be hunky-dory and everything's going to just automatically go exactly where you want it to. Emuna means a real test in your emuna. A real test in your emuna is when it doesn't go the way you want it to go, and you stay strong. And that's what the Rebbe was. He was strong until the very, very end. And he was mechazik everyone. Even while the world was literally burning under his feet. And he still was, he said, we have to be besimcha, and we have to be mekabel, and we have to daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything. So we're going to be learning the Piasetsna Rebbe, and there's some absolutely beautiful, and there's so much vitality, life, there's so much simcha, it's so uplifting, this sefer that we're learning. I'm sorry that you didn't get to do the Hakdama, which Avram Shor said it's an obligation on every mechanach and every father to learn the Hakdama of the Piasetsna Rebbe. It's so important. But I guess those of you that aren't here, that weren't here when we started, are just going to have to stick around for a while. Because we'll get back to it eventually. Baruch Hashem, we do have some people that sometimes follow the Piyasetzna Shiur, and we have them posted also on the website. And also, there's some people here on the phone together with us. One of them is our dear friend, Avigdor Gelman, who is here on the phone with us. He's listening. The other one can say hello to Avigdor if you want. I spent a lot of time with Avigdor and his family over Ben Hazmanim, because the family is going through a very serious challenge. Very, very, very severe. Avigdor's father, as you all know, has not woken up since he's been in a very, very bad accident. And the family is going through a lot. Now, we've been trying as much as we can to get schusim. And there's been many, many people from the shuls, the various shuls that Avigdor's father davens in, to the bachrim from the yeshiva, to people that don't even know them. They've been getting all different types of messages, the family. Different women will be makabel, extra kabbalas, of whether it's davening and tznius, or hakpadas and kashras, and different people are learning and making brachas. And it's a challenge, because we haven't really seen any improvement, and it's been weeks. But we're going to continue, Beis Hashem, to try to do what we can. As a schus for Chaim Yisrael ben Chaya. That's his name. His name was Yisrael, but they added Chaim. You should be zoiche to Chaim. So, some of the boys here came over to me, and I really appreciate it, and it's very heartwarming that people are thinking about someone else. I said, let's do something for Avigdor's father. Let's do something as a yeshiva. Let's take on ourselves a project. And we were discussing different things, and being that Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that there should be a chizik in brachas, and primarily there was many mesiyumim and meseches brachas, but aside for that, when I was there in the hospital, so I saw that there was a lot of emphasis and focus on making brachas bekavana. A person should focus on his brachas. So we suggested that perhaps we're going to try as a yeshiva, as a tzibur, as a family, to be mechazik in brachas. We're making the brachas anyway. It's really like no sweat off our backs. It's just a question of having us a little bit more concentration and focus when you make the brachas. So we're going to try to get up a sign in the dining room with the name Chaim Yisrael ben Chaya as a schus refuah shalema for Chaim Yisrael ben Chaya, schus refuah ha-shalema for Chaim Yisrael ben Chaya. And we're also going to put one in the coffee room. If someone's just taking a drink of water or a coffee or whatever it might be, a person should try to have kavana when he makes his bracha rishoina and his bracha achroina, just a little extra kavana. There's another thing which over Shabbos I was talking with some of the boys. In the past, we've made commitments, we made kabbalas as a yeshiva of not talking during davening. We had it once. There was a boy from Baltimore who was also in a very difficult situation. And one of the bachrim wanted to do something. And we decided we're going to make a kabbalah as a yeshiva not to talk during davening for a month. And we gave out also as an incentive that Bachim should have robes. The reason for the robes is they should have tznius. That Bachim was going through his own challenge. He had a very difficult form of cancer, which was in his entire body. So the Bachim had a feeling that the robe, which is something that covers the body, and that maybe somehow that would be a schus, and that person, Baruch Hashem, has recovered. Al-Kopanim, so that was our thought. Our thought was that maybe the yeshiva would makabel not to talk during davening for a month, and to give out robes to the bachrim. I called Avigdor on Matzei Shabbos, and I was talking to him about it. So he said, "Why don't we ask my mother?" So Avigdor's mother got on the phone, and we're speaking about not talking during davening. And she said, "I have a different idea. My husband," she said to me, "was very makbid to always daven with a minyan. He never missed a minyan. She said, we never went away to anywhere exotic because there's no minyan. My husband always davened with a minyan." She said, now my husband can't daven with a minyan, he can't daven at all. She said, it would mean a lot to me and my family if the bachrim would be makabel to daven with a minyan as a schus for my husband. And she told me to tell you that she knows it's very hard, but it would be very meaningful for them. If for the next month, now, just realize a month is going into basically Yom Kippur. The next month, you'd be makabel, b'li neder, not to miss a minyan. And Beis Hashem, we're going to work on trying to arrange also robes for the Olam, for afterwards, that people can also walk around the Beis Medrash in a, the walk around the dormitory, I'm sorry, not the Beis Medrash. No. in a tznias way. And Beis Hashem, we should be zoicha to hear Yeshuas and Refuas by all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, my friends, anyone wants to be in charge of this project, because I didn't, Dovi Goldman is going to be in charge of taking names. You're going to go around to the Olam and make sure, is that okay? Here we go. Let's get started. We are in the middle of a perek. I feel bad. We're in the middle of a perek, like, but it's like we're smack in the middle to go back and start. But this is where we're at. Every single line of the Piasetzna is so beautiful. So I don't really think it's going to be such a problem. But he's talking about when a person davens and the description of kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. If you remember. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I just have to read you the words. I just cannot read the words. But it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ein li hanoa ba'olam. I have no pleasure in this world. Ka'oisai shah, like that moment. She'einehem noisai sla'einai. You're not going to see it. It's in the paragraph before. That their eyes are when they say Kaddish, Kaddish, and look up to me. Ve'einai be'einehem, and we lock in embrace. Our eyes lock in embrace. And we see each other. We look. And when we say Kodesh, 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 it's like the most amazing moment for our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Ein li hanoa ba'olam. Ba'isei shoh, ani oiches b'kisei chavodi. I have to like hold on to my kisei hakovod. Ki'ilu kaviyachol. This is all kaviyachol. Kodesh Baruch Hu is like, he like loses ki'ilu himself. Like the ava that's happening when a person says Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh. And if we just understand that and appreciate it, how beautiful the Kedusha is. How special the Kedusha is. Okay. But Dvarim Halalu, I think that's what we're up to. Maybe we finished, but let's always get to that. But Dvarim Halalu. Te'ayin mitoich ri'iya bashamayim. With these words. Be ma'ayin in these words, what we just said. Okay, in the middle. But the whole point is to appreciate how precious your tefillah is, how powerful, how special your davening is. If a person would appreciate and understand that, it would give him a whole different type of approach towards davening. If he realized what his davening is doing in Shemayim, we don't realize. Chazal tell us, on so many people, it said if Aaron would have realized that what he was doing with Moshe was going to be recorded, Aaron would have run. If so many places, if by... Yehuda and the Shvatim with Yosef, if they would have realized, it's not talking about Yehuda, it's one of the other brothers that over there, I don't remember who it was, that he came in order to save Yosef, then he would have jumped. So we don't realize the impact and the power of what we're doing. If a person would realize, so then he would have a whole different approach, whole different chashivos, whole different respect for his own davening. With these words, ta'ayin mitoich ri'iyo b'shamayim, look into shamayim. V'ta'ametz einchav alipcho lahabit ulachavin, and you have to ta'ametz means strengthen yourself. Einchav your eyes v'lipcho and your heart lahabit ulachavin, to look and to direct your thoughts. U'bechlal kishata medaber laHashem. You're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're speaking directly to Him. L'moshel, you say, Atahu Elokeinu. You are Hashem. You. You're talking to Hashem in first person. O Baruch Ato Hashem. Afim Ein Ato Mabit B'Shamayim B'Shazu T'dayik Es Ato. Even if you're not looking up into Shemayim. But focus on the word Ata. You realize you're talking directly to Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to have a direct conversation. We don't even talk that way with some of the Rabbanim, because we refer to them in third person. Because there's a distance. A third person is like a distance. My father, when he used to travel to Europe, so he told me Europeans, back in the day, I think things have changed, but they never referred to anyone by their first name. They'd always call them Mr. Center, Mr. Center. You never call him by his first name. You call someone by the first name, they're like, who do you think you are? that's personal. That's personal. So, and when a person's speaking to someone who's chashiv, someone that they respect, you refer to him in third person, not just Mr. Center. But what would the Rav? It's like the Rav. Because you're creating distance. And we talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Ata. We could speak directly to Hashem. What an opportunity. Realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like Mamish giving us, it's a miracle. And we speak to Hashem. Utitzayir b'daitucha, shel Hashem asher l'negducha ato oimer ato. You're having a conversation. Davening has to become a conversation. A problem that we have with davening is we learn to daven when we're kids. And when we were kids, we just memorized words. So it's just words. It's just, I said all the words. We don't even know what we're saying. That's not what davening is meant to be. It's meant to be a conversation. You're talking to Hashem. Baruch Ata. Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. And if you can do that, davening takes on a whole different meaning. It's a different thing. And a part of our problem is we don't know what the words mean. So what we do is we read the words in Hebrew, and then we translate them to English. So it makes it even harder, because we're trying to do two things at once. Like, we're trying to read Hebrew and translate to English, and like, it's not a conversation. So part of davening, my friends, is just knowing what the words mean. And I remember as a kid, the first tefillah that I knew what the words mean was Mizmar Shir. That's just where I started. It starts in their own place. That's where I started. And Mizmar Shir was for me like the most, because I knew what it meant. And I would daven Mizmar Shir Hashem. And it's a beautiful, beautiful tefillah. Arumim Hashem ki dilisani. There's such beautiful words there. So in order for us to daven, we need to spend some time just learning what the davening means. What does davening mean? There's a Rav who writes a book on tefillah, and he says, I used to run through davening so at the end I could put in all my own words, and then I'd say, and then I realized, all of that's really in the davening. So what am I running through davening in order to get to there? Why don't I just learn how to daven right? Let's learn how to daven. Now, for sure, for a person that has feelings and he wants to express them, he should. And I do. You notice, but my Mincha Shmon Esrei takes much longer than my other Shmon Esreis. That's a large part of the reason. But at the same time, we have to daven. It's Heisnish can daven. It's not called davening if you don't know what you're saying. Truth, there's two different dinim in davening. There's such a thing as saying the words, and my Rebbe has a whole shtickle Torah that there's one davening which is just the saying of the words, and there's another davening which is the actual hischabrus, connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But a person wants to daven for real, my friends. And you want davening to be, davening can be something that is therapeutic. Sometimes people ask me, what do I do when it's too much? What do I do when it's too much? How do you unload? I daven. It's amazing. It's so therapeutic. I just unburden myself to Hashem. Shivchi kamayim libach nochach b'nei Hashem. I just Hashem, that's it. And then I feel great. So davening can be therapeutic. Instead of, there was a bacha once where one of the rabbis says, time for davening. He said to me, not me, he was talking to a different rabbi, he said, Rabbi, pray is a four-letter word. In other words, he hated it. It was disgusting for him. Davening can become the most beautiful thing if you know what you're saying. You have to put some time into it. You have to sit and invest. We make leanings on gemaras. We sit, we write in what the words mean. You got to figure out what davening means. A person does that. He realizes he has an opportunity to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You could talk to Hashem. And we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with that type of feeling. What does it mean? Avol, Rabbi, let's continue one more paragraph. Al tidame shirach ba'ifanim halolu levad sherashamnu lecha. You should not think that only with the instructions that we gave you, only with the etzos, with the tips that we gave you up until now that have been written here, those are the only ways that you can inspire yourself. Don't think that what I've written here is the only solution. No, it's not true. Kol ish Yisrael imrak yoideya. Every person, if he only knows, she'ein gufoi veliboi hefker. His body is not hefker. His heart is not hefker. La'sois ve'lachshoiv mikol ha'boli odom. To just do and think whatever comes to him. There's a saying in America, obey the urge. What the Rebbe is saying is you do not need to obey just your instinct and your urge. A person can control his body, he can control his heart, he can control his feelings. And a person realizes that and is prepared to take a grip and a control of his life. Kol ish. She'oived im atzmai, any person that's working with himself. Kepam bepam yamtzi loy oifanim ve'emtzoyim le'oirer es nafshoy. They will be presented to him ways and opportunities for him to inspire himself. I'm giving you some ways that work. The Rebbe is giving ways that work for him. I got ways that work for me. And every person is going to have ways that work for them. And if a person just realizes, I've got to take control, and then he starts being proactive. Let me think, what's going to work for me? How am I going to do this? How am I going to overcome this nisayim? How am I going to make sure that I don't end up where I don't want to be and end up the next day regretting what I did and what I was thinking and where? I need to take control of my life. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him opportunities because he wants it. L'hamtzi l'oyer es nafshei behem, to inspire himself. L'hislahef. And to get himself out of the trap and get himself out of being stuck in his body, bring him closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends it to us. We just got to want it. A person has to be ready to take control. There are times that will come to you, machshavos. It'll happen on its own. Sometimes you're not even looking, you're not even doing anything, and boom, it hits you. You didn't expect it. You didn't prepare yourself for it. Lemashal, for example. This is a classic example. This is the quintessential example. Anyom Naramim, during davening. Betfila. Kishemiranim Hashevach Hashem. People are singing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Atu Elokeinu v'chulu v'gam ata hischalti imayim l'ranen. You start singing along. V'yovoi moirech belibcha, and all of a sudden it comes into your heart a feeling. Halo ata now elyonim v'tachtoinim sharim shiru l'kel agado. Everyone, the people up, the ones elyonim, the malachim, tachtoinim, and all the tzaddikim here are singing shiru l'kel agado estase aleim. Ve'izeh shaychosli. Hashafel, me, I'm such a nobody. How am I, like, what am I in this picture? Ve'ich eskape, es chatzef. How could I have the chutzpah, lehis arev, to get involved in mishayir reikel or misamche elokim? What am I doing here? How do I fit into this picture? He's feeling it. It's like he wants in, but he doesn't know does he belong. Sometimes it happens on its own. And it's like you're feeling like I'm being pulled to this, but I don't know, can I do this? So how does a person deal with that type of situation? There's a Shembli Nedo. We'll continue with that, hopefully, next week.